This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Please, could you be tender, and I will sit close to you. Let's give it a minute before we admit that we're through. I guess this is the winter. Our bodies are young and blue. It's the Lookout Landing Podcast. It's late, and this one is for you. What's up, everyone? Matthew Robertson here with Grant Bronsden, fellow Lookout Landing writer. We are here for the second installment of our new series called Why I'm a Mariners Fan, where we try to get to the bottom of our own insanity, basically. And no better person to talk about designed insanity than you, Grant. Welcome.
Thank you. I am very excited and moderately moved by that opening.
You can thank Lord, famous singer-songwriter, for that one. Yeah, so we, for anyone who didn't listen to the first edition of this, we are using our off-season as a way to explore our own minds, us being the Mariner fan collective. If you want to listen to the first episode, go back and do that with our friend Zach Gottschalk, who is in the building but not on the mic. Is that correct?
Not in the building yet.
Not in the building yet. Could burst in like Kramer at any point during this. But we are going to ignore that and talk to Grant, who is a Lookout Landing writer, a baseball fan, currently wearing a Washington Nationals hat and t-shirt, which you might get into.
Let's go Nats.
On paper, allegedly, a Seattle Mariners fan.
I was just told to root for any team that has Washington in it.
Oh, I see.
But I do not extend that to the NFL team.
Right. Hockey, you're in. WNBA.
They're winning, so sure.
It's a title town right now.
It is, exactly. Title town USA, minus the whole football debacle.
Sure, and we don't need to talk about the Wizards, although they have my boy, Rui Hachimura, who I will mention once again, will be a better NBA player than Zion Williamson, which is looking good so far. I mean, Zion's not ready yet.
Williamson is hurt, and Rui Hachimura is not.
Not hurt, so who was right for at least one day? Matthew Robertson was. But that's not what we're here to talk about. You can find other podcasts where people brag about being correct, but that's not what we're here. We're going to get into Grant's fandom. Grant, you are Seattle proper resident. Is that correct? Born and raised?
Born and raised in Crown Hill and then Capitol Hill.
Wow, congrats.
Thank you.
So you subscribe to the I have to root for the team that's closest to the hospital I was born in.
I wouldn't say I necessarily subscribe to that theory, but in my case, that was not only the team that was very close to me, it was the team that was winning a heck of a lot when I was like 6 or 7 years old.
Okay, let's get into that then. Let's go from the very beginning. So you were born when?
Born in 1993.
Okay.
So sorry if I make you feel either old or young on the other side of
this
mic.
You're making me feel full of life as a spry 95 baby.
Well, so yeah, so born in 93 and, you know, my parents... My dad was a baseball fan, but not an avid one. But I think right when I was starting to, you know, like literally learn to read was when the Mariners were doing well. And my parents, as readers of the newspaper every day, saw that I was reading and didn't like that I was reading the scary news section at 3 or 4 years old and said, well, why don't you read the sports section instead? That'll be a safer section that... You know, shields you from asking questions like, what does 8 dead mean, Mommy?
Mommy, who's Monica Lewinsky? Is she on the Mariners?
And nowadays, the sports section might be much more full of unsavory stories.
Yeah.
But especially then, for better or often for worse, the focus was really just on sports.
Right.
So I ended up reading a lot of the sports section. And obviously, in the very late 90s and really, you know, early 2000s, the Mariners were doing quite well, and so it was a lot of fun to be kind of coming of age in that way, right as the team is doing so well and was an engaging team day in, day out.
But do you think, you said your parents were journalism supporters and sports fans, so do you think like it would have happened no matter what, even if you had been born, you know, into this current era of the Mariners, let's say, where they're really, really bad?
I think so. I think my dad would have pushed me towards being some sort of a sports fan. He's certainly become more of a sports fan because I've been really into sports.
Interesting.
But I think there's something magical about the day in, day out grind of baseball that can certainly be wearing at times, but can also be really fun to always have a game to watch. And yeah. I think I would have appreciated that, and I would have, you know, appreciated the game itself, no matter how good the team was.
Right.
I don't know if I would have become as big of a fan had the first year I was following the team, the Mariners not won 116 games.
Yeah.
That helped.
That's like your first memories of the team is 2001-ish?
I know that I went to, you know, a game or two at the Kingdome, and I think I was a fan in 2000, but I actively remember going to opening day in 2001.
Oh, wow.
And going to a number of other games during that season, including last week I learned that Zach and I went to the same 4-1 Tigers over Mariners game in mid-August 2001.
Huge upset, relatively speaking, for baseball.
The Mariners lost to an old knuckleballer
and just a
with
bad team.
Freddie Garcia and a 116 win team.
Yeah,
on their side.
Great callback. We love that. Zach did mention, for anyone who skipped that episode, that his dad tried to sell him to Bobby Higginson after the final out of an inning by yelling, "Bobby, 7-year-old here, 7-year-old!" And then Bobby Higginson just gave Zach the ball rather than purchase him from Mr. Gottschalk. But it's funny because Zach told that story, and I was like, oh, Bobby Higginson, he was pretty good. And then I went back, and I was like, oh, he was very meh. But he was just the best player on that team. So in my head as a kid, I was like, oh, if you're the best player on a team, you're like one of the top 30 players in the league, you know? But so, he was not that, as it turns out.
Speaking of the same kind of player, I have very strong memories of getting a baseball handed to me by who I believed to be, and taking a quick look at the baseball reference page, I'm not completely wrong, the best player on the St. Louis Cardinals, Woody Williams.
Oh, yeah. Great name, too.
So, great name, and looking at his career, just thoroughly unremarkably solid career.
Yeah,
with a career 103 ERA plus, and just, you know, a 132-116 record. He just was a dude who pitched a lot of innings.
Yeah, Woody Williams walked so Mike Leake could run. I've often said that.
It's a good saying. He also had a great season the year where I got a baseball from him. That was the one year he made the All-Star team.
Oh, he should have held on to that.
I still have it somewhere, but there's no way to tell that that was the ball handed to me by Woody Williams.
Right. Interesting. I think one of the things that still keeps me, like, not young, but, like, keeps me, like, sort of, like, joyous about baseball is realizing that a lot of things that I love about it are the exact reasons why people hate it. Like, there's too many games. Like, it's, you know, it takes a certain level of attention. Like, it's very slow.
Yeah.
All of that. There's, like, players who, like well, Woody Williams or Bobby Higginson who, like, you don't remember unless you're, like, really into it. And it's that kind of thing that, like, isolates a lot of people. Like, you bring up Bobby Higginson in a baseball conversation and people are like, I don't know who that is or what that is. Why are we talking about
what him? Is a Bobby Higginson?
But I love a conversation about random guys from my childhood.
Yeah, and I also think there's something about just that everyday cadence of baseball.
Yeah.
Some people love having one football game a week that you sit down, you watch that with your friends, you have a good time, and you center around that.
Yeah.
I think especially as I was growing up, just having the rhythm of you know, a baseball game every single day, or obviously almost every single day,
right,
from April through September. And, you know, I would get my homework done, or I would be, you know, spending time watching TV and say, oh, like, I'll watch the Mariners game. And then, you know, my dad would come in and watch a little bit of the game, and my mom would watch some of the game too. And she actually became much more of a baseball fan because it was a way to connect with me. And so I think that that was a really cool thing to just have this this everyday occurrence that was just kind of a staple that, you know, oh, what else is, what's going on tonight? I can just watch a Mariners game.
Yeah, totally. And there's a cold comfort, I think, to them being pretty bad for our whole life, because, or most of our life, because you can watch it without that, like it's the complete opposite of watching football, like you said, where it's like every play is so important. Whereas, you know, if it's mid-June and the Mariners are already 10 games under 500, you have that sort of ease of mind where it's like, everything that I watch from here on out is just for entertainment. I don't have to, like, analyze or, like, to some extent even care. Like, it's just there. It's that thing that you go to when there's nothing else that you have, you know?
Absolutely. And I do think the fact that they were winning earlier on in my childhood was a big reason why I became a huge baseball fan.
Yeah.
But it very quickly became a little bit of a countercultural point of pride of, oh yeah, I root for this team. Who cares if they're bad? They're my team. Yeah. And that makes me root for them even more, right? There are a lot of people that root for the Yankees because the Yankees win. And you know, I don't blame them for rooting for a team that wins. That's more fun. But there's something kind of perversely wonderful about rooting for a pretty awful team year in, year out, and always just hoping, yeah, you know, I hope they're going to be good. And yeah, if they're not, no big deal, like you said. But when they are good, it's going to make it worth it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And that's one of the reasons why I've been, like, longing for a playoff game to finally happen in Seattle, because it's there's no one who's just, like, I mean, there are some people, but it's not like there's people in Mississippi who just bandwagon the Mariners the way they would the Yankees. Like, the people who are going to be at that next playoff game at T-Mobile are going to be, like, the true, like, I, you know, endured this. It's not just, like, a thing that I... There's going to be the rich people, obviously, who scoop up the good tickets, but, like, the ones who are, like, really there and really, like, giving their all are people you can tell who have, like, lived and died with the team, whereas I think Yankee Stadium are going to have people, A, who just live in New York. Like, I don't think there's that much people in Seattle who are, like, you know, who would just, like, stumble into a Mariners playoff game. Like, they'd have to be pretty invested. I don't think it's one of those things where, like, you treat it like a movie where it's like, oh, let's go see what the Mariners are doing.
Absolutely. And I also think that the random people in, you know, Mississippi, let's say, who become Mariners fans, they do that because they loved Ken Griffey Jr. Or they fell in love with Ichiro in 2001 and then stuck with the team. And I think that reason of kind of quote-unquote bandwagoning becomes a real fandom if you stuck with this team for this long. And so that's a wonderful thing, too. Yeah. But just the idea, your latter point about people showing up to games, I'm going to the Sounders playoff game tomorrow with a friend from out of town. She's never been to a professional soccer game before. I'm a Sounders fan, but not a diehard I must watch or go to every game. It's more like, oh yeah, tickets were, you know, $30 including fees. I can go to a game, that'd be fun. It doesn't really matter that it's a playoff game, whereas like you said, when the Mariners are in the playoffs, it's Occidental is going to be crazy. The city is going to be talking about that game, you know, for the entire month of September, and is going to be so excited when it finally comes around in October. And that is going to be such an incredible payoff. I really hope it happens soon.
And that's kind of what we have to tell ourselves, unfortunately. Like, I don't know, I feel like you're a more optimistic, positive person than a lot of us. But, like, I'm curious how you approach this whole thing, like this thing being the Mariners, with both like your sort of innate positivity but also knowing what you know about baseball and how like there's not been a lot of hope essentially. So I'm wondering how you watch the Mariners knowing before the season even starts that it's going to be bad and still kind of have that gusto.
I think that's tough, and honestly that's something that I have struggled with, especially this season. You know, during the 13-2 start, it felt like a mirage, but it was still fun to watch. And then pretty quickly when we realized it was a mirage, it kind of took the wind out of my sails and made it harder for me to commit to watching baseball. But that said, I think you find, obviously, random diamonds in the rough that you can root for. I think you find positivity around, wow, it's really fun to go to Kyle Lewis's, you know, major league debut. It's really cool to see guys like Shed Long or Jake Fraley start to actually play a role with the major league club. And so you have to find things that aren't quite what a typical fan or a more normal sports fan would focus on and say, this is what I'm going to be looking for and this is what I'm going to keep following. I think that's a big reason why Felix developed such a cult following from, you know, his very first day in the Mariners uniform, was the fact that the team was so bad when he was coming up in 2004, 2005, that you could follow him in the minor leagues and go, wow, this guy could be something special. And then when he debuts with the team, he sticks with the team, you realize, yeah, this is what I'm going to be rooting for, this is what I'm going to be following. At least once every five games, there is a really cool thing to watch, and there's a chance of something special, regardless of if the team wins or loses.
Yeah, and that thing you mentioned about like finding the Shed Longs and the Jake Fraley's is kind of what I was referencing earlier about like how I can say Bobby Higginson to you and you know immediately who that is. Like, it creates a bond for sure. Shitty baseball in general, I think, does, where it's like, you know what I'm talking about. You've been in, you know, the trenches with me, so to speak, where it's like, I watched the 2019 Mariners, and like the whole time sort of actively hated it, but that's why I loved it, you know? Almost like a bad movie sort of thing.
And it's funny, it elicits a different emotion than if I were to say, you know, to a Seahawks fan, what about Marquise Blair or Malik Turner? You know, those are just random end-of-the-roster guys who, in all likelihood, will contribute as much to the Seahawks as a Shed Long or a Jake Fraley might. You know, we're not talking about blue-chip prospects in either case.
Right.
But that said, there's something romantic about baseball and about seeing these players develop and the hope that you have built up over many years that you don't have as much with football. I think football is, and other sports tend to be a bit more ephemeral, and having the long, slow build in baseball creates this bond between you and the random players on your team that no one else will know, but damn it, you know who they are. Yeah. And your fellow random team fans will know who they are.
I know. I think baseball has, in a way, broken my football watching brain because when I was a kid, like, just from an attention span standpoint, it was much easier to watch an entire football game than it was to watch an entire baseball game.
Yeah.
And now that's flipped. So, like, after, you know, just the way the calendars work, after a whole season of watching the Mariners, then it's like, okay, time to watch the Seahawks. And the game happens, and you're like, that's it? Like, I have to wait 6 days, and then I'm also realizing, like, I need to either, like, to actually consume a football game properly the way that I would want to as, like, the kind of sports fan I am, like, I really have to, like, turn everything off and, like, completely focus on every play because it's so weird how it's, like, that, like, ball snap, so-and-so happens, and it's over. You're like, okay, like, who did this? Like, who blocked well? Who, you know, what was the route combination and all that? Whereas baseball, I feel like it's much easier to, like, consume an at-bat differently than you would a football play because you know that there's a grander thing coming. Does that make any sense?
Or I think, like, so. I also think the way that one consumes baseball can happen even outside of watching and following games. It's hard to follow a football team closely, and it would be strange to follow a football team closely if you didn't watch their games.
True.
If you're a Seahawks fan, you probably make time most Sundays to watch the games, and if you don't, you're probably not that much of a Seahawks fan, which is fine. It's just, why would you not watch the one time a week the team plays?
Totally.
But if you're a Mariners fan, you can watch bits of some of the games. You could watch very little or maybe just highlights of all of the games. But you could still say, wow, Jared Kelnick was 3-for-4 again tonight. Like, that could be pretty cool in 2020. There's a different way of consuming each at-bat and each game. And I do think the way that one watches a baseball game it's much easier, I think, to casually watch a baseball game in kind of the back of your mind and have it as a comfort food and have a football game be the, you know, big meal that you've thought about all week that you make time for and you go and really focus on while you're there, and you appreciate the ambiance of the restaurant and the great service, and you end up paying way too much for it at the end. You're like, oh my gosh, it was this expensive. It's very different from, like, oh, like, it's that fast food that, you know, not the healthiest, but not bad, and always makes me feel good afterwards.
Yeah, the Mariners are my Taco Bell. I get it.
Exactly.
I actually really like that analogy because I also feel like sometimes it happens in basketball too. Any of the sports that are a little more fast-paced, or with football, not, like, the pace is kind of similar to baseball where it's like play, stoppage, play, stoppage, but there's just so much happening that I'll, like, finish watching a football game or basketball game and then realize, like, I didn't really retain anything, you know what I mean? Like, I'm watching for the results rather than the actual process. Like, I know, you know, so-and-so seemed like they were scoring a lot, but I don't notice, you know, like, in basketball, I didn't notice their defensive rotations or, like, who was guarding who as much as in baseball. It's like, you know, the only thing you see on the camera is pitcher, catcher, hitter, so it's like, you can't miss anything in that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, football, I do think
if you're just watching the ball, you miss the 20 other players that are doing stuff.
I think I don't know exactly how this affects my fandom of those sports, but I do think there's much more rewatchability for football and basketball because, like you said, when you watch a play or you watch even an entire game, there's always new angles you can watch, new things you can focus on, and new ways of taking in the information that you're seeing on the screen or in person. Whereas a baseball game, like you said, you're watching the pitch, you're watching the catcher, you're watching the hitter, then you're watching maybe the fielders. Yeah. And although there are certainly nuances that the more you get into baseball, the more you pick up on, oh, look how they're shifting. Oh, look how the catcher is framing this. Look how they're approaching this at bat. Those are the kinds of things that you can also generally pick up on while you're watching the game, and it's harder to have the time to reflect and expand or expound upon moments, small moments within the game.
Totally. And football and basketball, especially, like, people who are, like the smart football and basketball people and the ones who, like, do it for a living, they'll tell you, like, you can't really learn anything until you watch the film. And right. You wouldn't do that with a baseball game. Like, go back and break down the film, because it'd be the exact same thing.
The all 22 in baseball would be horrible.
Yeah. You would notice shifts, and that's probably it.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be more interesting, I think, in baseball to have a dugout cam, but they would never allow that. So it'll allow you to think along with the manager, but that will obviously never happen.
Oh, that would be a fascinating way to... It would be really cool to imagine listening into a manager and some of the conversations around, should we get this person going in the bullpen? Totally. How should we approach this at bat? That would be a fascinating view, and only maybe foreseeable in, like, a spring training game or like a random exhibition game.
Or one of those things
something.
Where it wouldn't be the same, obviously, but like one of those alternative broadcasts, if they just had a bunch of ex-managers who were kind of doing that along with you, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, maybe we just came up with the next great thing. ESPN 8 The Ocho is your new prime programming.
I want it to be managers who are also funny. Like, give me, like, Lou Piniella would be great at that. Like a Terry Collins, maybe.
Give me whoever the Mets, the Mets bona fide choice for manager.
No,
the rumor
bombshell
was it
choice.
Bombshell. Their bombshell choice. Who's apparently?
By the time this comes out, they might have already revealed that, or completely bungled it.
All we know is apparently not Alex Rodriguez, who said ha 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 to John Heyman, and it's not David Wright, who said ha ha ha, but only three ha's.
Oh, interesting.
So, I don't know
that
how you want to interpret it.
Could actually be A-Rod trying to throw us off the scent, and then tomorrow he's going to be announced as the Mets manager.
Entirely possible. Maybe even probable.
I hope so. I would love that. When did you start to notice yourself thinking about baseball differently? Like, when did it shift from, like, this is me as a kid watching baseball to this is me as an older kid or an adult being like, why did you throw that pitch here? Like, why are we starting so-and-so? Why do we pay this person so much money?
It's funny because my answer to that is not that different from when I started being a baseball fan.
Oh, really?
I am a very proud owner of a first edition copy of Moneyball.
Wow.
And so as like a 9-year-old, an 8 or 9-year-old, I read Moneyball, and at that point I read the book and told my parents I want to break Theo Epstein's record as the youngest general manager in baseball history.
Still
which
got time, right?
I have, I think, a year and a half,
right,
maybe
we'll
2 years. I do not think it's likely. I followed in Theo's footsteps for a little bit.
Well,
I went to his university and I edited
flex.
The sports section that he also edited.
Double flex.
Did not get as drunk as he did during some of those times.
Whoa.
I don't want to go into
this
too
is
much,
an
but
interesting
direction. All I know is that I did not completely follow in his footsteps, which we can certainly talk about later, but you know, I read Moneyball from at an early age, and I was already really a big fan of math and of numbers, and it just kind of clicked, whoa, this is cool to think about baseball this way, and I loved the blow-by-blow description of the trade room and what it was like when the A's were dealing for Ricardo Rincon at the trade deadline, and when they were looking at the draft and drafting Jeremy Brown and Nick Swisher, and all these guys. Exactly, yeah, Jonah Hill there in person as a you know, struggling actor before he even made it big. So it was that really affected how I viewed the game of baseball. I don't know if it affected me thinking about the shift or the other, you know, different ways of thinking about baseball, but it made me look at more of the off-season moves and the trades and the signings and the ability to use statistics from really 2003 on.
I love the idea of, like, young Grant being at a game and your dad or someone being like, hey, Grant, do you want peanuts? And you being like, shut up, Dad, I'm calculating win probability.
Did they even have win probability in 2003?
Probably not.
In 2003,
you could have pioneered it.
Again, the whole idea of Moneyball was just about using a statistic or using a thing that other people didn't properly value. And the big thing then was on base percentage, right? It was
gets on base.
People love Shea Hillenbrand. How dumb are they going to be when they see his 300 average comes with a 330 on base percentage? Those dummies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that was the advantage at the time. And I've never been able to figure out the advantage before it's become huge in baseball, which I think is the difference between me and Theo Epstein. If you do that, that's how you become a famous general manager.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm able to appreciate why teams should be valuing certain things or not valuing certain things. And it's really interesting, as much as it pains me to say it, to see how the Astros have optimized towards many of these things now. The fact that they're likely going to get through the entire season without issuing a single intentional walk is mind-boggling. Yeah. And that's a clear innovation where they said, we think there's value in not walking people to set up a double play. And has it been successful? It's, you know, kind of hard to say. I suppose you probably could isolate out those situations and take a look at it. But I think it's really interesting to see a team that is so hell-bent on taking advantage of every single optimization that they can and have the carte blanche from ownership to execute all of those.
Yeah. Counterpoint, though, fuck the Astros.
I do agree with that. That was a really detailed take that is also objectively
correct. But you're right. Like, the thing that also blew my mind about the Astros this year, they were the first team ever to lead the league in pitcher strikeouts and have the fewest hitter strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you couldn't even... Like, even if you were trying to do that, which they probably were, that's still just insane that they actually went out and executed it. And I think you're right about, like, the key is to obviously discover things first before other teams do it. And the Mariners, I mean, besides, I guess, finding Ken Griffey and being bad enough to take him 1-1, like, they've never really had that, like, forward-thinkingness, at least that we've seen play out in actual results. Maybe they had some idea that just fell on its ass, but...
Well, what's so disappointing, honestly, maybe the most disappointing part of my fandom was seeing Jack Zarensic get hired and seeing Tony Blangino come in and have this dedication towards analytics and this dedication towards optimizing around the ballpark and around things that other teams might not value as much. So having great defense and good pitching and playing up to the Safeco field of the time, right? Mm-hmm. Getting Franklin Gutierrez and all those moves. Yeah, and that was a winning team and you got excited about it. And then it turned out that the dedication to and attention to analytics and having this was, I don't want to say a complete front or a farce, but it was clearly not as thorough as it, you know, as many thought or as the media portrayed.
Yeah.
And I think that was a letdown for, I don't know, for all fans, at least for fans like me who were excited to see this change and excited to see what might happen. And then to see kind of the same old trope play out time and time again.
It was very like, reads Fangraphs once sort of thing. And the Mariners like, oh, we got it. We figured this out.
You ever seen this Fangraphs glossary thing? Like, wow, statistics, right?
Who knew?
Yeah.
It says here we should sign Sean Figgins. What do you guys think?
No, we should go all in right now for all these guys. This is going to be it.
Carlos Silva is just out there. Anyone can have him.
Yeah, it's, I mean, what a world. Yeah. Carlos Silva there, all it takes
at
is money.
Price?
Gotta do it.
So this is probably a good segue then into your time actually behind the curtain working for the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, give away all the industry secrets that you can. Please tell us all the passwords, best bathroom in the stadium, things of that nature. But also, the big question here is how did actually being on the inside of a thing that you grew up loving and worshiping to some extent, how did being inside it change your approach to the Seattle Mariners?
Yeah, so a little bit of context first for those of you who might not know me very intimately as friends. I had two internships while I was in college with the baseball ops department of the Mariners. That's the glamorous side of things. The less glamorous side is that my one-time office was actually outside of the actual front office by a door that you needed to swipe into.
Oh no.
And the office I was in has now been converted into what is known as a wall. There is no more door. It is just a wall over it. And so it was at the time a glorified supply closet, and now it is not even glorified. nor is it even a supply closet.
That's tough.
But that said, I mean, it was an incredible experience, right? I'd be lying if I said anything else. It's really cool to work for a baseball team. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible summer job in college to be able to be at the ballpark every day, to work with people and kind of see how decisions are made to a certain small degree. I mean, yeah. I can't say I had much impact on decisions. I can't say I was, you know, it's not like Jack Z was talking to me and saying, hey, Grant, what do you think I should be doing right
you
now?
You weren't the Jonah Hill of the Mariners.
I was not the Jonah Hill of the Mariners, although I do have a friend who was actually one of the guys that said, hey, we should try trading for Denard Span and Alex Colome.
That's cool.
So that was what he did as part of his season-long internship, and now he works for the team full-time.
Wow.
So this was a summertime internship that was both less involved and I was not nearly providing as much value as that.
So, okay, two questions. One, what seasons were these? And then what was the day-to-day for Graham Bronson?
So the seasons were the 2014 and 2015 season. So 2014 was a great season, and then I came back in 2015 and it was a less great season. That the last home game I was at was a no-hitter by Hisashi Iwakuma.
Okay.
And then a week after my last day, Jack Z was fired. So it was, you know, I guess Charles Dickens said it. Yeah. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
That's just, that's the whole podcast. That's Mariner fandom.
That is Mariner fandom right there. A no-hitter on a random August afternoon.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That was a Wednesday.
That was,
and you probably know, weather was shitty. I had two tickets that I got late, like maybe a day or two before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend, who was the only person who could conceivably go with me, had to work a shift at the Lids store at Bellevue Square. So he couldn't make it. Everyone else, that all my baseball watching friends, had jobs that they couldn't really wriggle out of. So I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go by myself. I'm not going to waste these tickets. And I saw no hitter.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I went down and had, you know, we sat in these tickets on the 100 level. It was pretty sweet tickets, unsurprisingly. And I thought, well, there's some work I need to do to finish up my internship, but like, I'll at least watch a couple innings of the game. You honestly get a little spoiled when you're seeing games every single day for summer, where you say, well, I don't need to be in the stands right now. I can watch it on TV while I'm doing work. But, you know, an inning or two in, I realized Iwakuma hadn't allowed a hit. And I thought, well, I'll just stay here until he allows a hit. Yeah. Why not? And then, of course, he throws a no-hitter.
Against a good team, too. That was the Orioles with Machado and good Chris Davis.
Yeah,
and
that's an important distinction. Good Chris Davis. Not, you know, arguably worst player in baseball history, Chris Davis, of the last.
I mean, you said it. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
But, yeah, so let's see. Going back to how that affected my fandom. Was that the most recent question?
Yeah, did it sort of – did the Mariners lose their luster? Or did it feel more like when you were watching after – like, you felt like it was a job, or like more of a less of a hobby, more of an obligation sort of thing?
Yeah, so I don't know how much of that is me getting older, how much of that is seeing the curtain, you know, kind of pulled back.
Yeah.
But it definitely did become more of a job, and I stopped appreciating it as much. I think I loved working with some, you know, on baseball and with some really cool baseball minds.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up just being a lot of baseball all the time. Which is unsurprising if you're working for a baseball team. You need to be almost single-mindedly devoted to the team, the industry, if you're going to be, you know, working for less money on a full-time salary because you want to be moving up the ranks and eventually be, you know, the decision-maker for a team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I realized I wasn't sure I had the focus for it. But it was still really cool to see this is actually, you know, a reasonable facsimile for how decisions are made. Or, you know, my favorite time with the team was each of the draft day, each of the 2 years. And being in the draft room with a number of the scouts both during the day and seeing players get taken and how that affected, you know, the immediate machinations of who to pick, but also seeing the board created over weeks and weeks where there'd be meetings with scouts and they'd debate different players and watch video and talk about stats and you know, read their psychological assessments and say, okay, you know, I think this person should go here. Yes, exactly. Figure out what their moon sign was or whatever it is. So I think that was really interesting, but it didn't necessarily give me a new window on how to be a fan. It just made me realize that it's hard to be a baseball fan while you're working for a team.
Yeah.
Because it ends up being your day-to-day occupation and the thing you think about all the time. For some people, that is awesome. That's all that they want. I don't think I was able to get that much enjoyment out of it. I started to lose that enjoyment. And so for me, I think I decided I didn't really want to work in baseball as a result.
Interesting. That's exactly what I was looking for. You really three-part essayed me right there. Strong beginning, middle, and end. So as you age, obviously, I feel like it's natural to develop other interests or mm-hmm. have, you know, you can't, some, I mean, you can, obviously, it's, you know, your own prerogative, but you can't just, you know, devote 24 hours of your day to baseball while also trying to make money and pay rent and have a social life and sure. all that. So, like, where does baseball fit amongst your other interests as you get older? Do you have other interests that even rival sports in general? Or, like, where, I'm guessing, like, the thing I'm trying to get at is as you become more of a person, which becomes, I think, more cynical naturally, and you become a little more jaded, how much energy can you allow yourself to bring to the Mariners?
I think that's, I have a couple different ways of answering that. One is about how I approach sports fandom more generally, and one is how I approach bringing energy to fandom. I think mm-hmm. to answer that second question first, I think the energy I bring is by getting a little less invested in being a sports fan. I'm no longer living and breathing with every single Seahawks game or with every single, you know, pitch or yeah. with every move that the team makes. I think I appreciate it and I care more about it than most people I meet in my day-to-day life. And people know that about me, right? They see, oh, you have how many Mariners bobbleheads in your room? You have,
how many is it, by the way?
I think it's around 25 or 30. I will say it helps when you work for the team. You get the free giveaways. Sure. So I got probably 6 or 8 that way. So that's a bonus, but still. Also still obsessive outside of that.
Yeah.
So I think that I bring less energy to being a fan, and I'm less invested in the team. But I still watch and follow along. I think what's actually more interesting is that as I become older, my fandom becomes much more about everything that happens around the events, around the games themselves. I become much more interested in reading about the hows and whys and the nuance behind moves and plays and decisions.
Yeah, podcasts, parody songs, things of that nature, game threads.
I was going to say things like LL, Fangraphs, yeah. Twitter.
Obviously.
Yeah. Talking with friends, not just about, wow, he hit that home run, but wow, yeah. like what a dumb decision to pitch to that player. Right. Why would you do that given that, I don't know, he hits lefties so well, especially when you're throwing him a high fastball.
Sure, this is the Moneyball grant.
It's the Moneyball grant coming out. And I think it also becomes about combining the sports things that go on the field with the bigger picture political, socioeconomic trends, whatever else it yeah. might be, and talking about, you know, the role of money in sports, talking about the role of, you know, amateurism and the NCAA, talking about coaching decisions and hiring decisions and trades and signings and kind of all the other like moves and apparatus that surrounds these sports. Mm-hmm. I've found myself kind of getting more invested in that. And so things like the NBA, like that's now a year-round league because of all the things that are happening off-season and the games that are happening during the season. And writers like Zach Lowe, who's one of my favorite basketball writers, I love him in large part because he can geek out about the games and I can learn things I never would have known about how the Raptors approach pick and rolls. Mm-hmm. But I can also learn about things from big signings to trades to court and uniform design, yeah. right? Like it becomes so much more than just here's what's happening right now in front of you.
Yeah.
And so I think kind of combining those aspects is what's allowed me to engage in sports in a different way than when I was 7, 8, 15, 20 years old.
Interesting. So do you ever find yourself like having to having your interests compete with each other? Like I'm sure it's happened at some point over one of these summers where it's like, you know, the Mariners, especially during the good years, like, oh, the Mariners are good, I want to watch this, but I also have, you know, real life people who I care about who want to see me. Like, how do you deal with that? Because I've the first year, last year, that I was working for LL was one of, you know, at least the first half of it, we'll call it, was amazing. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, like I have this new opportunity. People are actually reading and listening to what I say about the Mariners. But then it's also, you know, summer in Seattle and I had just moved out of my dad's house. And I was like, I want to live life, but I also right. want to stay in 5 nights a week and watch the Mariners play, you know, the Rays or whatever. Like something that no one else can really understand unless they're doing it with you. Like it's so hard for me to sort of explain it because there's almost no way to explain it. Like it's very hard to have someone who doesn't give a shit about the Mariners understand why you want to watch a Thursday night game.
Absolutely. And I think for me what often gave was watching the game. And so it would be hanging out with friends, following the game on Twitter, on the ESPN app, on, you know, like by texting with other people.
Yeah, good old-fashioned Reddit stream.
Exactly. Thank you to our MLB streams. Please never shut it down.
Yeah, it's getting dicey.
But I think that was what really helped me, you know, kind of keep that fandom and have my other social and professional obligations. I think it's definitely tough to figure out how to balance being a fan that wants to watch a lot with having other things. Mm-hmm. But I think I've done it in large part because of the way I kind of approach my fandom that I just talked about. I enjoy watching games, but I can also watch the highlights later and get a lot of that same enjoyment back. And I can follow along with how other people watch it and what other people are thinking of the game. So I guess in some ways my fandom has gone from I love taking in every at-bat, every pitch, and the rhythm of it all, and, you know, just having that old friend Rick Riz, his voice over, you know, in my ears for 2.5 hours. It's gone from that more regularly to occasionally that, and much more often seeing how the game is going, watching highlights maybe as they happen, watching the full highlights afterwards, and talking with people in person and online about what actually went on and the decision making behind all of that.
Yeah, I think it's weird too to have an interest be as all consuming, and also I think the important part is time based. Like the Mariners play at a set time every night, and if you're not watching it at that time, you miss it. You know, like, you know how other people will like do things with their life.
That's not baseball.
I've heard about it, but I've never actually done it. But like, you know, they'll even people who are just like really into TV, like they can just do that because of the streaming era now at any time they want.
Yeah,
you don't really have that luxury as a Mariner fan unless you want to do the dreaded, I'm gonna record this, try to avoid the score, and then watch it later when I'm trying to, like, when a normal person should be falling asleep, like, oh, I gotta watch this Mariners game. Like, it's weird to have something sort of have that control over you.
Well, I think it's interesting, and this might be sacrilegious to some of you listening, but I think there are ways of breaking from that harsh, fierce kind of time constriction, restrictions. Yeah. Anyway.
Words are tough.
Words are really difficult, especially when you've got a beer in hand.
Man has had one beer, everyone.
Talk about a crazy Tuesday night. Is that what day
Take that,
it is?
Theo Epstein. Grant can drink and talk about going to Yale and control himself, unlike someone.
I never said that.
I'll say it.
But yeah, no, I do think that there are ways of... I forgot what we were talking about. We were talking about following along with...
How to navigate caring so much about something that's at a set time.
Yeah, and I think there are ways now with both the ease with which highlights are available, with all of the discourse online, the capital T, capital D, the discourse online.
Folks, you gotta get on the discourse.
The World Wide Web, it's changing the game. But yeah, I mean, the ability to read the Seattle Times game recap, the LL game recap, maybe a Fangraphs article talking about it, or the highlights you might get that in a 3 or 4 minute package online. There are so many ways of consuming the game without actually watching all 3 hours of the game that I think you can shift how you're a baseball fan. And I don't know if that is sacrilegious. I don't know if I'm less of a fan because I watch fewer games. You can make the case that I am. I'm not going to argue against that. I just think my fandom has changed. And especially as the team has gotten less good, I've spent more of my time watching those highlights and engaging about the team, but not watching every minute of the game.
Yeah, I think that's totally healthy. I mean, obviously no shade to anyone who is watching all nine innings for 162 nights a year, and then probably also following to some extent the minor leagues or even just other MLB teams. But I think it's totally okay. Like, I don't really understand. I understand it, but I don't align with this whole, like, fandom gatekeeping thing that some people do, where it's like, if you don't know every person who played for the Mariners this year, you're not a real fan. Get out of my face.
But like, it's tough because if you're a Mariners fan, I get being like, no, you know, you just started rooting for the Mariners in 2018 when they were winning.
The fear,
like,
is that
I started when they were bad. Like, I earned this.
The
fear
is they're going to be good, and then it's going to be a Seahawks situation.
Exactly. And I think that is what a lot of Mariners fans worry about, and why a lot of Mariners fans do some fandom gatekeeping, because they want to differentiate themselves between the more bandwagon fans, right? They want to say, no, I have a Matt Hasselbeck jersey, so I'm a real Seahawks fan. I, you know, Sean Figgins is a name that I once, you know, wrote soliloquies about. I'm a real Mariners fan. But yeah, no, I do think there are lots of different ways of watching baseball. I don't know how much of it is because the Mariners have been just bad for a long time. I don't know how much of it is because baseball games have gotten a little longer and a little less interesting, in my opinion, to watch all of. I don't know how much is me getting older and appreciating different things, or me getting older and having different priorities or more things I need to be doing.
Yeah.
But I think to some degree, all of those factors have combined to completely change how I watch baseball. It's not, oh yeah, I come home, I turn on the Mariners, and then I just watch that game and do other things in the background. It's, I come home, I will follow the game thread, I will follow Twitter, I might have the game on in the background, but I really just kind of listening, and then I'll watch the highlights afterwards.
Yeah, I've definitely grown into appreciating baseball and the radio a lot more. I think it's great, especially like if you are trying to get some stuff done and you don't want to have like a visual distraction, just having Rick Riz, who I'm partial to, no offense to Aaron Goldsmith or Gary Hill, but Riz is just the one that I like. It's like your parents' voice, you know, like when you're in the womb and then you hear it outside of the womb, it's like there's
science
behind it.
I often do think about hearing my parents' voice while I was in the womb.
Yeah,
so.
But no, like that's actually like a thing. Like you're supposed to, not to get into raising children because I cannot claim to be an expert, but apparently there's a whole thing of like if you talk to your baby while it's in the womb, then when it comes out, it's more, you know, familiar with you and more comfortable with you. That's how I feel about a man I've never met named
and
Rick Riz.
What's funny is that I think I have a bit of the same association with Steve Rabel for the Seahawks, because he's done Seahawks games for so long. But there's something so infinitely comforting about Rick Riz talking about the Mariners, you know, like hearing his voice just makes you slip into the same feeling. Same with Dave Niehaus, right?
Yeah.
Hearing his voice makes me slip into a more carefree time where, even though the vast majority of what we watched were crappy Mariners losses on random, you know, May afternoons or evenings, what I remember are the incredible walk-off calls or a dusky twilight in summer where the Mariners were up 4-3, and you know, you have the fond memories. And I don't know if that's just a defense mechanism of the human brain focusing on good memories, but it's pretty cool to have that with the radio and have that relationship just with the voice in a way I don't think you get with other sports to the same degree.
Yeah, and it's kind of like with anything where if you're, you know, if something is objectively bad, but you see someone else caring so much about it, like Dave Niehaus did, then you, like, it's infectious in that way where you're like, well, if he cares this much, the least I can do is, like, tune in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want this person who's giving their life to this to not have anyone appreciating it.
Yeah.
And I realized recently, to go back into, like, the whole, this is my interest, but it's also become more than that. Like, I realized pretty recently that, like, sports and music are kind of it for me. Like, that's all I really do. Like, I don't have those other hobby, like, at least material hobbies, where it's like I don't have, like, a, you know, Wednesday night book club or, like, I don't know, rock climbing or whatever it is that other people are doing.
Are those the two things that other adults do?
If you don't like sports, your options are
book clubs and rock climbing.
And rock climbing.
Take a note.
It was just top of the brain. I don't know why. I've had a weird day. But, you know, like, it's very interesting to have, like, other people try to weave their life into mine, where it's like people will give me TV recommendations. I'm just like, who has the time? It's baseball season. And then baseball season will end, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should get into one of those TV shows people are telling me about. And it's like, oh, no, wait, I got to stream King's Magic or whatever. Like, something that nobody cares about. You know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah. Why are you watching this basketball game in Sacramento when there's a whole world out there? And it's like, I just decided, I guess, subconsciously, that sports was the thing that I will treat the way other people treat social lives outside of their house, or even just, yeah. You know, other entertainment-based things that are more acceptable as, like, a hobby sort
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, I think we all figure out the hobbies and the loves that we want to spend more time paying attention to and consuming. And I mm-hmm. think, you know, for people who are sports fans, sometimes they're casual sports fans, and that's great. And they're able to, you know, occasionally watch a Mariners game, and more accurately, occasionally go to a Mariners game and rarely ever watch a game on TV and then do other things, but still be a Mariners fan.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they're also recording Mariners podcasts on Tuesday evenings with multiple framed pictures of
that's
Safeco
true.
Field in view.
That is a good
from
point.
Here.
Yeah, to paint a picture for the listeners, to my right is a fairly large telescope, but then just past that is a framed photo of 2018 opening day. Is that
exactly
what
it is? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a red carpet in the outfield. It is a picturesque gray day, and the Mariners are getting ready to have what they do not know yet will be a very tumultuous season. And I think that's actually a very nice thing to have looking over my shoulder as we create this art. Also over here to my left is Jackie Robinson watching the other team celebrate, which feels a bit heavy-handed for what we're doing, where it's like, if we're Jackie in that situation, we have to watch every other team actually enjoy baseball, whereas we're like, when will it be my turn? As
yeah.
we're also, I'm assuming you are frantically Googling the World Series.
Well, no,
score.
I was just noting the fact that you noticed as Jackie Robinson watching the game, when most people would say that's Ralph Branca allowing the shot heard around the world to Bobby Thompson to win the pennant. That was the Giants win the pennant, Giants win the pennant, Giants
well,
win the
okay.
pennant.
Well, okay, the way that the photo is framed, I don't even see Ralph Branca.
You might notice Bobby Thompson and Ralph Branca's signatures on the picture. I mean, they're
wow,
not real signatures,
flex.
But... they're not real signatures. They're printed on.
Sure.
I'm not trying to claim that this is actually signed by them. But regardless, the point is that's how most people would recognize the picture. But yeah, there are three framed baseball pictures in view. Some people just get really crazy obsessive around sports.
Yeah.
There's also a framed picture behind
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
As you have seen before of the NBA team circa, I think it was 2004, 2005.
Heavy mid-2000s vibes. The Sonics are still in play here. The Charlotte Bobcats are still in play. Every logo is pretty much outdated by this point. And I think that's really, like, to tie a bow on this whole thing, like, that kind of encapsulates this whole thing that we're talking about, where it's like, mm-hmm. at a certain point, our little brains decided that this thing that a lot of other people treat as, like, oh, I'm going to go out with my friends who have tickets. We're going to go see a baseball game. We're going to go see a basketball game. Or, like, you know, my dad was into it. I grew up doing it with him, and then it phased out. Us, we're still doing it, recording
yeah.
a thing about us talking about the thing while remnants of the thing are sort of watching us do this. It all feels very appropriate to me, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know if that resonated with
no,
you.
No, I think so. I think we all... treat this game and this, you know, love of a pretty mediocre at best baseball team.
Absolutely.
We all take it seriously because there's something about it that resonates with us. There's something about the consistency of baseball every day, or, you know, analyzing a sport in different ways, or just the crack of the bat and watching it, whatever it might be. People fall in love with different parts of it, but we definitely fell hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I think for me it was the steroids.
Huge fan of steroids.
Yeah. I like, you know how you were reading the newspaper and you were like, oh, what does 8 dead mean? I
yeah.
was like, where do I get these steroids I keep hearing about? I want to hit dingers.
So that explains the 20 to 30 pounds of muscle gain that you've had in the last 6 months.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what's happened. I think it also helps the podcasting, you know?
Oh, huge.
It's not
yeah.
like, because obviously, you know, it's for short bursts of energy, which is kind of what a podcast
yeah.
is.
A little bit of stamina, a lot more rage. That's
yeah.
really exactly what you can ask
yeah.
for.
Okay. I have two more questions before we wrap this
sure
show.
Thing.
One that I was kind of chewing on it as we were talking, because I think we've danced around it. The whole conversation about how for some people their fandom is at different levels. My question for you is, do you get mad as such a, you know, dedicated baseball fan? Do you get upset when people talk shit about baseball and say that it's boring, or like, how do you, you know, because it's definitely a thing. As much as baseball itself wants to kind of sweep it under the rug, like, America's losing interest in this sport.
One of my best friends from college is a huge sports fan, you know, knows every sport intimately, just, you know, really, really goes deep on it, and he absolutely hates baseball. And he will tell me all the time, he will gleefully remind me, because he loves gleefully poking fun at me, that baseball sucks, and it's a dumb game, and it's boring and stupid, and he hates it. And I think, you know, I don't get mad at people who dislike baseball. I think I am at odds with people who enjoy making fun of others for the things that they like.
Yeah, let people like what they like.
And I think that there's a lot of arguments as to why baseball isn't the most exciting sport. And I don't actually disagree with that with many people. I think if it's harder to become a big baseball fan if you don't kind of fall in love with the romance of all of it at some point in your life. For many people, that's when they're younger and they kind of say, wow, it's fun to just watch baseball.
When
and hang
did you
out.
Play baseball also?
I played that baseball helps. And you know, knowing the game that way and just kind of having fun and hitting a ball and fielding and just hanging out in the dugout, like, that's a really cool thing too. But if you don't play and you don't fall in love with it when you're younger, it's not impossible to become a fan. Plenty of people become fans later on, but it's harder because you have to really fall in love in this way that I think is much easier for a child to do. And if you don't do that from either a young age or from that perspective, I think it's just, it can be really difficult to get into baseball. And so I get why people don't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would agree, like, don't hate people or hate on people for being a fan of something that, you know, you don't really like.
Yeah. Like, I do think it's unequivocally the least approachable sport, because football, it's just 16 games. It's once a week. It's on the weekend. You can, you know, it's much easier to be a casual football fan, I think, than a casual baseball fan. And basketball, also a very long season. People don't really talk about that when discussing basketball. But I think the excitement of the coolest basketball play is probably, I would say, the best of any sport. I don't know if you agree with that. Maybe that's just my own personal bias.
I would say a soccer goal might go over that because of how excited the commentators get, how rare they are,
I didn't even think about that.
How the whole game builds up to even opportunities where it might happen. But, you know, I do think there is more in-game drama in, I would say, basketball, football, really most sports compared to baseball. Baseball, the in-game drama is very much limited to, like, the eighth or ninth innings, maybe a little bit more in playoff games.
And a lot of it is, like, you kind of creating it in your head. Like, the more you know, the more you can be like, oh, that's interesting that he threw that pitch, that's interesting that they're not stealing. Like, all of those things become much more
a baseball
apparent.
Game where a team scores 7 runs in the first inning is boring, makes the game really boring to a lot of people right away. But especially if it's a playoff game, you're like, oh my gosh, like, this is crazy.
Historic,
I cannot believe that the Cardinals scored this many runs in the first inning of game 5 of the NLDS.
I mean, that'd be equivalent to, like, in the first ninth, whatever, that, you know, scoring 50 points in the first
six minutes. It's basically like, oh yeah, the Seahawks took a 28-0 lead in five or 6 minutes into the first quarter. And you're like, wow, this is fun. Like, this is awesome.
You're like, wow, I didn't even know we played the Jets today.
But, like, what else is going to happen the rest of the game? Like, that game is over.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, then last question, because this wouldn't be a Mariners conversation unless we got into our feelings a little bit. What was your lowest point in Mariner fandom? Or when I say darkest moment involving the Mariners, what's the first one that comes to mind?
Darkest moment involving the Mariners. I would probably say the first thing that comes to mind is not one specific moment, but really just the time after my hopes have been completely dashed.
Oh, Jesus.
So I would say much of August and September of 2018.
Yeah, that was bad.
As one example where, you know, like in 2019, I never thought the team was actually good. And so when the team was predictably bad later on, it was okay, this is kind of as expected. There are still things to look for. But I was so damn sure when Mitch Haniger hit that walk-off home run in the rain against the Angels to take like an eight-game lead over the Angels in the division, I was like, you know what? We're going to make the playoffs this year. Like, this team is actually pretty good and, more importantly, is in great position. It would take a pretty big fuck-up to not make the playoffs.
And then guess
what happened? And seeing that air just get slowly let out of the balloon for 3 whole months was a really demoralizing thing. And I think it's nice to have a few months to just decompress and forget about baseball after that kind of a thing happens. But I think that's probably those kinds of moments are my lowest moments. I mean, the last time the Mariners made the playoffs, I was both 8 years old and sure that we would make it again the next year because, you know, they just won 116 games. Of course, they'll make the playoffs the next year.
And your spreadsheets probably said that they would make the playoffs.
You would think.
They had a good team.
Yeah, they won, what, 93 games and then 93 the year after that too. And then suddenly they went 69 and 93 and things were a little less impressive. And they stayed bad and then didn't actually get good but had one false start of a year. It's funny that the strongest memories I have of the Mariners as a team probably were in the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, even though I've been a fan since 2001.
Yeah. No, me too. I mean, that's obviously in large part due to our age, but my most, like, indelible Mariner memories are the Cano era, so to speak.
Yeah.
2014, 2018 were probably the most fun I've had because, like you said, when we were kids, like, you don't know anything different. It's that whole conversation of, like, would you rather be born blind or have the ability to see and then lose it? You know what I mean? That's what 2018 was like. It's like, I don't know if I would have rather had them be bad all year or have that heartbreak that came after thinking that they were going to actually do it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks, bud. This was a wonderful conversation. For those listening at home, we're going to be doing these literally all off season. So if they get too sad or maybe too grating, please do let us know and we can try to pepper in a little more positivity. But we're going to try to give you at least one of these every week with a different guest. Smash the hell out of that subscribe button and read lookoutlanding.com. Grant Bronsden, anything to plug?
Right now, the Nationals have a 5-3 lead in the seventh inning, so I'm going to plug the Nationals bullpen.
Well,
please come through.
Do you understand how this works? This is going to come out tomorrow morning. The game's going to be over.
I understand the concept, but I'm hoping that by plugging it, I will make the Nationals bullpen actually be functional for once.
All right. Grant has ensured that Fernando Rodney will somehow throw a pitch over the fence, resulting in a run for the Astros, and lose probably in the worst possible way. Because you can take a man out of the Mariners, but you can't take the Mariners
out of the
man.
The one actual plug I will give is play wiffle ball. It is really fun. You think it is a game for 8-year-olds, but I tell you, absolutely a great game for 26-year-olds and 8-year-olds alike.
This is so on brand. We started with Grant talking about reading Moneyball as a 9-year-old and ending with him plugging wiffle ball.
Honestly, nothing has changed. Every single one of my elementary school teachers would be proud.
They sure would. If they could see us podcasting, oh my God, full hearts.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening. This was Lookout Landing Podcast. Goodbye.
Bye. I